by 1840, the big golden heyday of when every single farmer was growing hemp from one end of the state to the other pretty much came to an end. After that, you know, I think a farmer said, you know, heck with this stuff, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to buy a shirt. I'm not going to, you know, sit there and take a whole year, because from the time you put the seed in the ground until the time you were wearing your homespun shirt and trousers, it took about a year.
Hello, and welcome back to the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming, and today we're going to be talking to Les Stark. He's a hemp historian and author of Hempstone Heritage. We'll talk about hemp's long history in Pennsylvania and what led to its disappearance. And we'll also hear about Stark's 20-year mission to bring it back. Hello, welcome back. Like I said in the intro, today we're talking about the history of hemp. Here's a guy who wrote a book about hemp history in Pennsylvania. He's also a founding member of the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council, and he's the fiancé of our guest from last week.
My name is Les Stark, and I'm a hemp historian, and I'm born and raised in Lancaster County. And I got interested in the history of hemp over 20 years ago. I read a book by a guy named Jack Herer. The book was called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And in his book, he details a fascinating history of hemp from its ancient beginnings in Central Asia, and it spread throughout Europe and throughout the world, and all the things that you could use hemp for and so forth. And in the very beginning of his book, he said that wherever there were major hemp growing regions, there were towns named after hemp. And he mentioned Hempfield Township in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And when I saw that, a light bulb went on over my head, because, you know, I had lived in Ephrata my whole life, and I was on the wrestling team. We used to wrestle Hempfield in high school, and our football team played them. So, you know, Hempfield's just right down the road, about 20 minutes away. And I wondered, how come I've never heard this before? I've never even stopped to consider what is a hemp field, and I never remember anybody talking about it. I thought that if it's true, there must be information to back this up. So I went to the Historical Society and started what would become a process of many years. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I started in 1997, and for the next 5 years especially, was a pretty intensive phase of my research. I compare it to, suppose you're walking in the desert in Egypt, and all of a sudden you trip on something, and you look and you see this tiny point, and you start to brush the sand away to find out what it is that you've uncovered, and here you've discovered an entire pyramid that nobody knew about. And that's what it was like finding this hemp information. I got, I found a fact here and a fact there, a sentence or two here and there, and a couple paragraphs, but nothing ever extensive had ever been written about the history of hemp in Pennsylvania. So I sort of got drawn into it, and next thing you know, I had uncovered a whole different world that nobody knew about.
So what was that pyramid that you discovered?
Well, it started out, I went to the Landes Valley Farm Museum, and they were the very first place that I went before, later that night I was to go into the Lancaster County Historical Society. But the Landes Valley was the first place, and on my way out, I grabbed a pamphlet, and the pamphlet had silhouettes of the various millstones that they had in their collection. And I saw a silhouette of a cone-shaped millstone that they said was a hemp millstone. And they said that in 1810, I think is the year they were saying, or 1820, that there were 20 hemp mills in Lancaster County. So I thought, wow, there was 20 hemp mills in Lancaster County. I can't believe it. And so I wanted to find out who owned those mills, where exactly were those mills, how did they operate, and from what years were they in operation. I found out that the story was actually much bigger than anybody had ever realized. And using the tax assessment records You know, I went through township by township from the early days of Lancaster County until about the 1820s or so. And I found that between the years of 1720 and 1870, there were actually over 100 water-powered mills for processing hemp fiber just in Lancaster County alone. And further research, I was able to document about 36 hemp mills right here in Berks County where we're at. There was one owned by a man named John Lesher right here in Olney Township during the time of the Revolution. And I documented about 36 hemp mills in York County. And then those three counties, York, Berks, and Lancaster, I did pretty extensive research. And then I sort of did a cursory search of many other counties. And I found hemp mills in Lebanon and Dauphin and Cumberland, Juniata, Perry, Northampton, Lehigh, Montgomery, Bucks, pretty much everywhere. And wherever there were settlements in Pennsylvania, people grew hemp. And, you know, so that was really the biggest thing, was finding out all the mills to process it and to, you know, find the names of the owners of those mills and the years they were in operation, how they operated and all that.
So where did they go? Why was that history so hard to find?
Well, it's strange. I've often wondered how they were sort of successful at completely erasing this knowledge from our minds and, you know, wiped out of our collective memory. And I always wondered how that happened. Basically, you know, in school, we always taught that in 1794, Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin. And when he invented the cotton gin, that made the mass production of cotton more feasible. But what they don't tell you is what do we use before cotton? And up here in the Northeast, we used almost no cotton at all. We didn't grow any. The three main fibers were hemp, flax, and wool. Although there was a huge market for hemp in Philadelphia, especially in later years, we had a big shipbuilding industry. And every ship took between 60 to 100 tons of hemp for all the big thick anchor cables, all the rope rigging, the canvas sails. All that was made out of hemp. And all that hemp had to be replaced every couple years, so that ensured an enormous and insatiable demand for hemp from the interior of Pennsylvania. But the shipbuilding industry, that was only one market. Basically, the primary reason that most people in Pennsylvania grew hemp was on a fairly small scale, 1 to 4 acres was average, I would say. And what they were growing it for mainly is for homespun clothing. Homespun clothing does seem to be pretty much the number one use for hemp in Pennsylvania. And but even in the 1820s, when these cotton manufacturers started coming in, hemp was still huge and still was the number one fiber for homespun clothing. But by the late 1820s, you can kind of sense a little bit of decline, and it declined further in the 1830s, so that by 1840, the big golden heyday of when every single farmer was growing hemp from one end of the state to the other pretty much came to an end. After that, you know, I think a farmer said, you know, heck with this stuff, I'm gonna go to the store, I'm gonna buy a shirt. I'm not gonna, you know, sit there and take a whole year, because from the time you put the seed in the ground until the time you were wearing your homespun shirt and trousers, it took about a year. And it was a lot of labor involved. And I think that the farmers welcomed the new textiles that they didn't have to produce for themselves. And then there were other things. We started getting flooded with cheaper imported fibers. Matter of fact, Russia was one of the world's largest producers of hemp. And Russia supplied most of the world with hemp. And even though we produce a tremendous amount of hemp here in Pennsylvania, we also imported a lot from Russia. And in later years, it sort of got displaced by hemp from the Philippines. But so there's this constant conflict. Actually produced in 1789 at the first federal Congress, it produced the first tariff on Russian hemp to protect the home hemp industry. And these tariffs were played with, adjusted over the years, because some of the rope manufacturers and so forth, they didn't like the tariff because it was actually cheaper. Russia used serf labor, so they could mass produce it very cheaply and send it all the way to Philadelphia cheaper than what a farmer here in Berks County or Lancaster County could produce it and send it down there. So in the 1820s, after a period where the tariff on hemp had been drastically lowered, the farmers were really irate because they sensed that, you know, they were losing the homespun market a little bit. These imported fibers were flooding in at an increasing rate. And a lot of people thought it was, you know, our patriotic duty that the U.S. naval vessels should be, shouldn't be reliant on a foreign source for hemp. And so there was a lot of tariff agitation in the 1820s. And James Buchanan, who was probably the worst president that their nation has ever had, but he was actually a good senator, and he represented the farmers of his district in Lancaster and pushed really strong for this tariff. And in 1828, they passed it, and the farmers celebrated, but it was a little bit too little too late, and you kind of sense it declining. Now, by 1840, that's about the year that's recognized that, like I say, the big heyday when everybody was growing, it sort of came to an end. But it hung in there, and people still grew it in pockets of commercial production all the way into the late 1930s. And a lot of people grew it for non-commercial uses, too.
So what happened in the 1930s to make things change?
Well, in the 1930s, in 1933, Governor Gifford Pinchot signed a law banning marijuana. And that right away, it wasn't supposed to ban hemp, but they had no way to scientifically distinguish between what's industrial hemp and what's marijuana. So in 1937, 4 years after Governor Gifford Pinchot signed that law, the federal government made marijuana illegal. And again, it wasn't supposed to ban industrial hemp production. That was supposed to be allowed to proceed, but they had no scientific method to distinguish what is industrial hemp and what's marijuana because, you know, the main difference is the concentration of THC. And THC wasn't discovered until it was isolated in a lab by an Israeli chemist in the 1960s. So what happened was it was easier to just lump them all in together, just call it all marijuana. So we find that, which is actually one of the ways that we know that hemp was still being produced by some farmers in the 1930s, is because some of those farmers were among the first to be arrested under the new marijuana laws. For example, in Lancaster County, on July 5th, 1938, there was a man, 81-year-old hemp farmer named Enos Schaefer. And Enos Schaefer was growing a long strip of hemp alongside of his garden. And the police in the neighborhood, they got word of it. So they came in and discovered for themselves, and they pulled up the plants and they found him and arrested him, hauled him off to jail. And Enos admitted that he was growing the crop, but he said he had no clue whatsoever that it was illegal. Because as far as Enos Schaefer was concerned, he was growing hemp and he was growing it for seeds for his chickens to eat. And at his trial, he told the judge that he had grown hemp all his life and that his father had grown it and that they had always grown it to feed the seeds to their chickens. There was never a time where we weren't producing it. I mentioned that 1840, you know, the era of when everybody grew it ended. But in 1850, if you look at the agricultural census, there still was over 1,000 tons or so produced in Pennsylvania. In Lancaster County in 1850, there were still 540 and a half tons of hemp produced that year. About 400 tons of that were grown in the area of Strasburg by four different farmers who each grew 100 tons. And then you had about 86 tons grown by about eight different farmers in East Cocalico Township. And there was some grown in Earl and some in Bart and a couple other places in the state. And then they say that during the Civil War, when the Southern embargo cut off our supply of cotton, they say that the hemp industry had a tremendous growth in the Civil War years to make up for that fiber. But by 1870, after the Civil War, you started to decline it once again. But still, even in 1870, Lancaster County produced 270 tons of hemp.
So I've heard stories, maybe conspiracy theories, that there was something else that actually caused hemp and marijuana to be made illegal. Can you talk about that at all?
The theory was put forth by Jack Herer in the book that I had mentioned earlier, and a lot of researchers have sort of picked up on his theories and expanded them. And the theory is basically that certain industries that felt threatened by hemp, some of the new emerging industries that were coming out, for example, DuPont, they had a chemical process to turn wood pulp into paper, and there was this new nylon rope coming out, and all sorts of reasons. Now, I have done some research, and I personally don't espouse that theory because although there's some circumstantial evidence to somewhat seem to indicate that it may have been true, there's also a lot of really good research that has been done that almost convinced me that the sort of conspiracy theory that a lot of us believed for a lot of years and asserted as fact may actually not be true. But even if there was a conspiracy against hemp by these industries back in those days, I don't see much of evidence of a current conspiracy against hemp by these industries. Nobody's going to stop it or get in the way. I don't think so. I'm a historian, and I like to assert facts that I can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt. And since there is doubt, I'm not personally one who, you know, says that it was DuPont and all these, you know, other industries.
When I talked to Judy Schwank for this podcast, she mentioned you by name, specifically as someone who was instrumental in bringing hemp back to the state. Can you talk about that?
Well, it was pretty neat. Actually, the credit goes to Erica, too. Erica and I.
Quick side note, he means Erica McBride. We interviewed her last week on the podcast. Check that out. Okay, back to you, Les.
We first we had a meeting with Senator Mike Fulmer, actually, in May of 2014. And Mike was the first person to make a commitment to introducing a hemp bill. So once he made that commitment, then we went to Senator Schwank. And what we were hoping for is that we could get her support and hopefully mark her down as a yes vote. And then our higher hope was that she would sign on as a co-sponsor. Well, Judy told us, she said, you know what? Anybody can put their name down as a sponsor to a bill. If I'm gonna put my name down, I want to be the prime sponsor. So we talked to Senator Fulmer about that, and he was completely cool with it because at that time, Senator Fulmer was working full steam ahead, 100% for medical marijuana. And he didn't have necessarily the time and the energy to devote to also pushing the hemp bill. So he said, if Senator Schwank wants to take the lead, that's fine. So once we got the commitment from her, then we had a bipartisan effort already, a very conservative, almost libertarian-leaning Republican Senator in Fulmer, and sort of a moderate to liberal Democrat in Senator Schwank. So then we set about getting co-sponsors, and we lobbied for hearings, because at first, the executive director of one of the ag committees, he said that, you know, we don't need to have hearings, we'll just come up with language that the committee can agree on and we'll send it on from there. But I wasn't confident that everybody would have a full grasp of the issue. So we actually lobbied to get hearings, and we trudged the halls of Harrisburg, and we gave every single member of both the Senate Ag and the House Agricultural Committee a copy of my book about the history of hemp in Pennsylvania. And we also gave them a professional looking information packet. And, you know, we were successful at getting these actually bicameral hearings, which are fairly rare between both the Senate and the House Agricultural Committees. And we just kept walking the bill through every step of the way, right down to making sure it gets floor votes by talking to Senate Majority Leader Dave Reed. We take our fair share of, of the credit, but we couldn't have done it alone, actually. And when we were about 3 months into our legislative journey, that's when we met Jeff Whalen. And Jeff was really interested in helping us, and he jumped on board. And, you know, sometimes we ask ourselves, could we have done it without Jeff Whalen? And we think maybe we could have, but he cinched the deal. He helped us out tremendously. And it was mainly the three of us who were doing all the lobbying, but we organized about 24 volunteers who helped us along the way. But it was a long process. I mean, we've been working on this for a long time. I'm talking about, you know, back in 1999, and again in 2000, we were working with the Lancaster Farm Bureau, and we got the Lancaster Farm Bureau to pass resolutions in favor of hemp. And in November of 2000, the Lancaster Farm Bureau, led by, at that time, Mary Jane Balmer, she took that to the Pennsylvania State Farm Bureau, and in November of 2000, they passed a resolution supporting hemp. And then we worked with the Pennsylvania State Grange to get them to pass a resolution supporting hemp. Then we worked with the Pennsylvania Farmers Union. So we had a lot of institutional support for many years, actually. But part of it was, you know, one of my angles was, of course, as a historian, I wanted people to realize that hemp grows very well in Pennsylvania.
All right, so fast forward to now,
mm-hmm.
and you're here in the beautiful Ole Valley,
mm-hmm.
surrounded by, what, 50, 60 acres of hemp?
Yeah, we planted about 50 acres this year.
And how's that feel?
It's a tremendous feeling because we're at the, you know, we're not even at the in the infancy, in a way. We're more in the embryonic stage. So everything's new. And what we really would like to happen is for this farm to become the epicenter from where hemp spreads, so all these other farms in the neighborhood start growing it, and then that spreads throughout Berks County, and that spreads down to Lancaster County, and into this whole region of central Pennsylvania, where we once again assert ourselves as leaders and become an actual powerhouse in hemp production, just like we always were known for. And I think that possibility, we have everything going for us. We have in central Pennsylvania, in certain regions, especially Lancaster County, some of the best soil on earth. We have a strong work ethic. We have capital that's available. We have one of the most innovative farming industries. And we have close proximity to all major markets on the East Coast. So everything that it takes to succeed, along with this incredibly fascinating, rich history of hemp production. And I think you combine those factors, and we're at the beginning of something that may turn out to be bigger than even my wildest dreams and imagination.
Okay, thank you, Les. And thank you all for listening to this week's podcast. Hope to see you next week. And remember, on iTunes, click subscribe so you don't miss anything. And be sure to check us out online at lancasterfarming.com. And if you have questions or comments or concerns, or you just want to say hi, send us an email to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Okay, in the meantime, we'll see you in the newspaper.